morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Today's Tuesday, April 14th, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
We talk with Michelle Gross of Communities United Against Police Brutality in Minneapolis.
Legislators debate the question of in-state tuition for the children of undocumented immigrants.
And the fear-mongering industry scores big this time. Al-Qaeda, pirates, Al-Qaeda pirates.
Portland area weather, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, chance of thunderstorms and hail, highs around 50. Tonight, partly cloudy, a little rain maybe, lows in the 30s, and winds coming up to 15 to 25 miles an hour. A little bit more clear tomorrow.
And first we go to regional headlines from around Cascadia. Under a bill that narrowly passed yesterday, polluters would pay steeper fines for violating Oregon's environmental laws. Senate Bill 105 proposes to increase the maximum penalty from $10,000 per day to $25,000 per day. The bill also would increase the maximum penalty for negligently or intentionally spilling oil or hazardous materials into state waterways from $20,000 up to $100,000. From a corporate cost-to-benefit perspective, that's still polluted peanuts.
U.S. District Court Judge Gar King has fined a company $75,000 for allowing chicken remains to be illegally dumped into the Columbia River. The fine comes a year after the California Shellfish Company pleaded guilty to the Clean Water Act violation. The U.S. Department of Justice says more than a third of the fine will be placed in the National Fish and Wildlife Fund and will help pay for environmental projects in the state.
I've always thought of chicken as a hazardous material myself, but shouldn't it be if it's, $25,000 a day? What, this was just 3 days they did it? I doubt that very much. Portland, you had your chance at embracing public utility power and you blew it. Now we're all held hostage to the threats of PGE. Oregon's two largest electric utilities are scrambling to head off limits on the amount of carbon their power plants emit. They're warning legislators of massive rate increases if they're forced to comply with Oregon's greenhouse gas reduction goal. Power companies are betting on the ignorance of their customers, and they'll win if we don't stop them.
Yesterday, legislators debated a controversial bill before an overflow crowd in Salem. The bill would mandate that undocumented immigrant students living in the U.S. would pay in-state tuition at Oregon's public universities rather than steep non-resident tuition. This is the fourth time Oregon student leaders and administrators have tried to pass such a bill. They argue that affordable public higher education for those who live in the state, regardless of their legal status, benefits all Oregonians.
Well, duh. What else can you really say? Obviously, we do have a bit of an education gap there, or we wouldn't be still debating this. The Pew Hispanic Center released a report today that finds growing numbers of children of undocumented immigrants are being born in the country. The findings show that they're nearly twice as likely, though, to live in poverty than those with American-born parents. The children of undocumented immigrants born in the United States are, of course, American citizens, yet they struggle in poverty and uncertainty, along with parents who fear deportation and toil largely in low-wage jobs and face layoffs in an ailing economy.
Oregon's jobless rate has taken a dramatic jump to 12.1%, a rate seen only once before since the state began collecting uniform data in the mid-70s. The increase could saddle Oregon with the highest unemployment rate in the country. If President Obama really wanted to effect change, he could mandate a moratorium on layoffs. Workers would keep their jobs, homes, and purchasing power, and management would have to live in just one house instead of five or six.
Microsoft announced yesterday that it would be giving out 30,000 vouchers to help Washington's unemployed get new computer skills. The vouchers will entitle people to take computer classes for free, either in person or online, and they'll also be able to take free Microsoft certification exams. But here's a much better idea for fixing the economy.
Yeah, experts say an unprecedented confluence of factors might finally be driving a change on a topic once seen as politically too hot to handle, legal marijuana. Among such factors are the recession-fueled need for more public revenue increased calls to redirect scarce law enforcement, court, and prison resources, and a growing desire to declaw powerful and violent Mexican drug cartels. Also in the mix is a public opinion shift combined with some new high-profile calls for legislation.
Liam, if we can figure this out, why can't legislators? Okay, you're sitting on the bench, taking a little mental health break in the park, feeding peanuts to the squirrels. Comes the explosion. Lord love a duck, what is it? North Korean missile attack? Somali pirates? Nope. If you're in Spokane, it's the Finch Arboretum bringing in some special artillery. The agency is using a special machine called a Rodinator Pro. Rodinator Pro. To detonate some of the estimated 100 to 150 squirrels tearing up the grounds. Spoke Animals, Director Gail Mackey, said, "You're kidding. That borders on cruelty." Mackey said that she'd be investigating the practice.
The Washington legislature wants to prohibit gun ownership for mentally ill people who have been involuntarily committed for 2 weeks or more. The new bill broadens the prohibition to people with 14-day commitments and makes it apply to both adults and youths. When a person is committed, their information would be sent to the Department of Licensing and to a national database. Those people could apply to have their gun rights restored once they satisfy several requirements, like maybe being sane.
It would help. Yesterday, we spoke with Rob Cernick, one of the RNC 8 defendants in Minneapolis. That city has seen an alarming pattern of police misconduct in recent years. My guest this morning is actively involved in fighting the power and asking the hard questions that need to be asked. Welcome, Michelle Gross with Communities United Against Police Brutality. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Michelle, one of the stories that has been in below the radar, below mainstream media's attention, was this fellow, his name is Wolfgang Aronson. Is it Aaron, his last name? He apparently was in his apartment, and the police went in and with grenades. Is this standard procedure?
No, it sounds, completely outrageous. But yet, we have had a lot of outrageous conduct going on in this community. Most people think of the Midwest as being sort of sleepy and kind of, everybody's happy and everything's peaceful. But we have tremendous issues with racism, classism, and all of the other kinds of problems that happen in other communities. It's just that people don't talk about it as much here. And we have a tremendous problem with police brutality here in Minneapolis. I mean, much bigger than most people can possibly imagine.
In your experience, what would you say is the most egregious example?
Well, we've been doing this work here in the Twin Cities for about 10 years, and we see, everything from day-to-day indignities, like racial profiling stops and things like that, to a case in which Native American men were put into the trunk of a police car to be transported to the station. We've had, in recent history, multiple killings by police in this community, including one in which it was discovered that the cops put down a throwdown gun. They put down a gun to try that one of them was carrying to try to justify what happened to the gentleman who was unarmed when they slaughtered him. And we've just had all kinds of terrible situations and multiple killings in recent months.
Why do you think it's so easy for the police to get away with it in Minneapolis of all places?
Well, there's a culture here that the police, first of all, the police federation is very powerful, and they cow the politicians. The politicians are very afraid to cross them because they are allowed to endorse candidates. And so all candidates here sort of cow to these police federation. But also because we have a chief here who was one of these corrupt, good old boys who is, just facilitates everything that they do. There's no discipline. Our civilian review authority has been severely defanged. And so there's no consequences for these police officers to do these things.
Thank you so much for that. There's a great deal more to talk about along these lines. Here in Portland, of course, we have Dan Handelsman, somebody who you've worked with and have known for a long time. And bringing these incidents to light is pretty much the only power that we have over our own police force. Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Michelle Gross with Communities United Against Police Brutality. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like Portland, huh? The twin rescues last week by the French and American navies off Somalia are unlikely to end the problem of piracy. Quite the opposite, say analysts. They say the pirates are likely to increase their use of violence, and that could lead them into the arms of Somalia's small but powerful Islamist militias for protection and support. Somalia's radical Islamists praise the dead or captured pirates as mujahideen, or holy warriors.
Well, that would be certainly suggest al-Qaeda. We're going to go to one more international story before we pick up again on the national front with Spencer Raymond. A judge says a Florida law that would make it more expensive for travel agents to book trips to Cuba is unconstitutional because it interferes with foreign policy. Federal Judge Alan Gold threw out the 2008 Sellers of Travel Act, which requires agencies that sell trips to Cuba to post a $250,000 bond with the state. Agencies that don't book Cuba trips only have to post a $25,000 bond. And now we go to D.C. Dirt. Of course, it's tax time, and it's also been no money time for most people for quite a while now. People are already living a high-wire nightmare, choosing between food and housing. Now they're confronted with the bill for the banks and the bailouts and the wars. The super rich, who, let's face it, could solve a lot of our problems just by paying their fair share for the privilege of doing the rest of the poor, they'll skate on this one as they always do. KBOO Spencer Raymond joins us this morning to consider this. Good morning, Spencer.
Good morning, Chris. Yeah, tax day is tomorrow, and as you said, a lot of Americans are going to have extra trouble this year writing those checks to the federal government and state governments to pay for their taxes. One thing that is kind of unexpected for some, but we're seeing this year really in large numbers for the first time, is an increase in tax when people pulled out of their 401ks or their IRA, retirement funds in the fall. So remember, Chris, when the market started falling and everyone wanted to pull out, for those people who did take out the money from their 401ks and their IRAs, that is considered taxable income if those people were not of retirement age yet. As much as 10% sometimes could be taxed towards this money taken out of the market. So this is something that is unusual, but given the current situation, and especially the last part of 2008, a lot of people are facing more taxes on top of what they would already need to pay.
And, of course, the cruel irony is that if one has a share in a company that at one point was worth $50,000 and the shareholder panics and sells it for a dollar a share, they're still in for the capital gains tax on selling those shares. Topping it off, of course, there's the global tax dodge game, which has siphoned off billions. Some people, some international economists even suggest it's up in the trillions of dollars into what you can only be considered a black hole. We don't know where the money goes. I mean, there are the tax havens, and one of the shots of the G20 summit was that everyone agreed that they should crack down on this. We don't see very much of that. These people seem to get away very nicely, whereas people who are war tax resistors very often face prison. War tax resistance is still alive and well. And have you noted recently any stories yourself of people who have actively resisted paying taxes that are devoted towards warmongering?
Well, there's different lines of thought for the people who are willfully, the willful disobedience bunch who are not paying their taxes in a, kind of a protest effort, separate from people who simply don't have the cash on hand to pay it. Whether they're not paying it for, if they're protesting because they're, mongering wars or what have you, I haven't seen too much of that.
And then, of course, there are the people who, Ron Paul, libertarians who believe that paying taxes, it should be illegal, that the government has no legal foundation upon which to base the taxation of the citizens. They've been very vocal lately. They were getting up steam a couple of months ago before April 15th rolled around. Well, so people are going to have trouble paying taxes this year. That's absolutely true. What the IRS says is that, of course, it's a good idea to file no matter what, and people have to be the best judge of what to do faced with tax men.
Yep, that's right, Chris.
Thank you so much for that. That, of course, was KBOO Spencer Raymond joining us as he does every weekday morning with DC Dirt. Thank you so much, Spencer.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Tuesday, April 14th, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Janet Anderson. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio station at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, Flashpoints, the upcoming elections in Haiti, and an interview with a man imprisoned 20 years for a crime he says he didn't commit.
Thanks for listening, and have a good day.